Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Welcome to the show. If this is your first time listening, I'm glad you're here. You may find this isn't your typical business entrepreneur interview podcast, and well, that's exactly what we're going for. Make sure, though, you stick around till right after the interview. That's where we pull out one of the hacks from the conversation, and then we go through it. If you have been here before, welcome back. I appreciate you being here, and I hope to be better today than I was the last time. All right, let's get into the show. My guest today graduated from Yale Law School, spent some time working at a London law firm before deciding that she wanted to start her own business. During the same time, her husband began taking photos of weddings on the side. That was 12 years ago. And since then, they've scaled from one-off wedding photography to being named one of the top wedding photographers by Vogue magazine. Now, let's hack Mary Marantz. Just before we get into today's conversation, I want to share with you today's sponsor. So, on its own, even a good idea isn't always as powerful as it could be. But when a good idea is shared, it gains strength and momentum. It becomes capable of changing things in ways both small and large. A good idea shared becomes an innovation. Discover.bot is an online community for bot creators. Amazon Registry Services created Discover.bot to serve as a platform-agnostic digital space for bot developers and enthusiasts of all skill levels to learn from one another, share their stories, and move the conversation forward together. Whether you're a developer or brand new to bots, you can get started with their beginner's guide. Go to discover.bot/hackentrepreneur. Once again, that's discover.bot/hackentrepreneur. All right, let's get into the conversation. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very, very special guest. Mary, welcome to the show.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. And when I kind of got the email about this, I basically told Justin this was like a total dream. I'm really super excited to be here. Nice. So thank you.
Absolutely, yeah. My pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure. I'm happy to be doing this, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So let's jump into it, shall we?
Yeah, ready.
All right. Mary, I know you are a woman. You wear many hats and you go under many sort of titles, but today we're talking to Mary, the entrepreneur. And as an entrepreneur, Mary, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Oh, man, that is such a great question. I feel like when I was getting ready for this call and I was talking things over with Justin, and I was really kind of trying to say, like, Justin and I have a photography business. That's like very specifically what we've done for the last decade plus, but my heart is really for entrepreneurs in general. And so I didn't want it to be anything that was too specific to our industry. So when I was kind of thinking through what is that sort of secret sauce, right, that helps people across the board, that really has kind of been a big like play factor for us. I think it kind of boils down to, we heard a speaker once say, you leapt the first time the ledge came around. Will you leap the next time it does? So for us, I feel like one of our greatest strengths slash sometimes our families think we're crazy is that we're not afraid to leap and we're not afraid to take risks. And every time we get that kind of like, feels like the wind has been knocked out of you, not in that like you've been punched in the gut sort of way, but you've leapt off a building and you're not sure if the net is going to appear. Every time we've gotten that feeling and you're scared to death, we've always taken that as an indication that we're right where we're supposed to be. Because I think that there is this very specific personality trait that an entrepreneur has to have. They have to either be born with or somehow learn to develop over time. And that is this ability to not wait for permission. And so we think that in a lot of the paths that we go through, you know, I told you before we hopped on that I was potentially going to go work at a law firm. And law firms are very good at telling you what you can and can't do.
That's their sole job.
That's their job. And permission there is very important. You don't do a whole lot in a law firm without permission. When that summer we were deciding whether to start our business or not, one of the law firms said to me, "Oh my gosh, law firm is so great. When you have to cancel your vacation for work, they'll totally reimburse you." And I said, "If that's a bonus, you think that's a bonus, we have a problem." So I feel like entrepreneurs have to have that ability to not wait for somebody to say, "Hey, bucko, champ, you're there. You've made it. You've arrived. You're at that crosshair intersection. Have waited your turn and made it. And now you get to go do the thing." And so entrepreneurship is waking up every single day over and over and over and being the permission for yourself, which feels so scary and so uncomfortable and so raw and naked and out there, you know, in the middle of the class that you forgot to study for the exam, that nightmare we all have. And it's doing it anyway. And it's figuring out, if we take this leap and this risk and we fall flat on our faces, is the lesson learned going to be the success, or are we actually going to be able to make it work? But either way, every day when the ledge comes around, we're taking that leap.
Nice. I love it. So you have a path that not many people take to entrepreneurship. Most people don't go to Yale Law School, graduate, and then decide that they don't want to be a lawyer, that they want to start a business. And yeah. 12 years ago, you did this. And so yeah. 12 years of entrepreneurship, it changes a person. And in a good way, but it does make us, we deal with fear, we deal with sort of unknowns, like differently, and I'm going to say better than the average person, because we just have the experience of it now. Mm-hmm. But 12 years ago, I'm sure there must have been to deal with the fear now sounds one thing, but 12 years ago, what was that fear that you were giving up a law degree at Yale? I guess you weren't giving it up, but I mean, you probably kind of were. Yeah. And you were going into business yourself with a huge unknown.
Oh, yeah. I always tell people, I went to Yale Law School to become a wedding photographer, which is just a really expensive way to become a wedding photographer. I don't recommend it, but I do very much recommend. I'm so glad that I had that background. We use that all. Our contract is stellar. Like, don't mess with our contract. We use it all the time in our business. But you're absolutely right in the sense that my dad is an eighth generation logger, not lawyer, but logger in very rural West Virginia. I was the first person in my direct family to go to college, definitely the first person to get a graduate degree. I got a master's in philosophy in England, and then I went to law school at Yale. And so when I kind of got that acceptance letter, my dad was sort of like, done, you know, like you are there. Like, I have raised you up right and set you off in, you know, out of the nest, you're on a path to success. I don't have to worry. And so I feel like that kind of moment where, and so many of us, and I bet so many people who are listening are probably right in this place where there's kind of these two paths diverging out in front of the rest of your life. And there's the safe, supposed to, secure, stable, you know what's coming path. And then there's this path that's your calling, this thing that you can't go a day without thinking about, right? And I feel like in those moments, my belief and the thing that kind of helped us take that leap is that when you have somebody in your life who has sacrificed for you the way that my dad sacrificed for me, it's actually counterintuitive, but I believe taking the leap is the better thing to do to honor that sacrifice. That when we start to settle for safe and supposed to, and the road that everybody thinks you're supposed to go down because it'll get you a good job and a mortgage and the credit card debt or whatever else it is, that's the American dream right now. When you take this other path, even though it's scary and most people feel uncomfortable on your behalf, like you're watching somebody jump off a building, like you're going to be uncomfortable on their behalf, I actually believe that's the thing that honors the sacrifices made for you the most, because you're not settling. And you're not just merely saying, "I'm comfortable and I will be satisfied with success. I need to do something that's truly significant with my gifts and serving others." That helped. That definitely helped. I think some other things that helped were Justin and I were... In 2006, we were engaged. We weren't even married yet. We were a young couple. We didn't have that mortgage yet. We didn't have a bunch of kids that we had a dog. He liked to eat, but we didn't have a lot of responsibilities or obligations or things to be fearful that they wouldn't be taken care of as well. I hadn't spent a year taking that law firm job. I think that made all the difference. I think if we'd gotten really comfortable with that thousands of dollars a week paycheck and the bonuses and the New York apartment or whatever it was, I think it would have been a lot harder to walk away. So I think we left at the right time because we were broke. I was a broke student. Justin was a broke assistant. We were used to being broke, and it made it a lot easier. And so when we coach people now who are in that stage of be more like the age we are now. I'm 38. And they have the kids and they have the house and they have people counting on them and they've gotten really comfortable in a routine. I think that that can lead to that. Can I really do this? Do I have permission to do this? Oof, that jumping off the ledge is a whole lot scarier. And that's when I think we kind of talk about practicalities of setting up emergency funds, of setting up the transition, of quitting the day job in the right way, stuff like the book Quitter from John Acuff. I'm never going to be the person who's like, the Nike version of starting your business, just do it. It's going to be amazing. Like, it's going to be hard. You're right. 12 years in, I'm really glad I'm from New England because I'm already salty. And entrepreneurship absolutely makes you salty. But it's a good salty because it's kind of like that grit and that tenacity of picking yourself up a bunch. But I think that if you are in that place where you're looking at those two roads that are diverging and you're like, everybody wants me to take this supposed to left path, but I keep being called back to the right. And you know it's where you're supposed to be. I say, let's do it, but let's do it well.
So let's go back 12 years to the start of a wedding photography company. Mm-hmm. There are countless, I know at that time, but now everybody thinks they're a photographer.
Yeah.
Because of technology. And there's so many people who would love to become professional photographers and start a business. Some people manage to do it as a side hustle. Some people get some work. Some people don't get any. You and your husband not only started the company, you got clients locally, I'm assuming, and then you also pushed it so you could travel the world doing this. There's a huge sort of divergence between that end of it and the person like just wishing they could just get one wedding to do, even for free, and they can.
Yeah.
At what point when you started, did you realize that we should push this beyond our local area?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be honest with you. It was from the very beginning. And that goes right back to the story I already told you is when you grow up in a trailer in West Virginia, and it was as rough as trailers get. It was the single wide. There had been kind of this like lean-to makeshift roof that was just crumbling, like it poured inside. The floors were falling through. Mushrooms growing out of the carpets, like the smell of mildew on your clothes. It was as rough as it gets, but it's kind of like pretty standard for that area. And I, let me be very, very, very clear for anybody who's listening. I adore West Virginia and I am so proud of where I come from. So that's not a slam. It's just this, when you grow up that way and you are an only child, which I am, and your dad's a logger and he works really hard to sacrifice for you, I think it can make you this super overachiever. Like you start to feel like all of this to make sense. If I grew up poor in a trailer in West Virginia, the only way this is going to make sense if whatever I do it all the way. But this was just like the humble beginnings of some great story. And so it can... There are extremes of that. There's either this makes you have an incredible work ethic and you are going to go build things that matter and you're going to strive for bigger goals. That's kind of like the good when you're operating in your healthy version of yourself. And then there's just like workaholic, like perfectionism, like totally paralyzed with that perfectionism. It's never enough. The problem with more, the checklist of more is that it's never enough. I kind of have to deal with both of those ends. Like when I'm operating in my, this is where I came from. This gives me purpose. Let's go build something. Then it's really great. But I just had to have to stay away from that. I get my identity in my work because that's never a good formula. So I feel like when we first started our business, if I was going to leave the check mark by my name and the identity and the pedigree and the success story of Yale Law School to go be a wedding photographer, and at that time, 12 years ago, and maybe even now, it kind of goes through ebbs and lows, highs and lows, ebbs and flows, all the things.
Yeah.
At that time, it was not a prestigious job. It was kind of like, and for Justin, who went to the number one photography school for advertising to become a wedding photographer, his professors were like, what? Like disappointed. This was like, this was the cheesiest, pointing the flash right at them, like every movie ever made, just a really not prestigious job. And so for us to both leave these, RIT is the number one photography school, Yale's the number one law school. We were on these like paths to go be New York advertising and New York law. For us to leave that, I felt, I don't think Justin ever felt it as much as I did, but I felt if we're going to do this, we have to go somehow be the very top of the top of what it is to be a wedding photographer. And the problem with art, the problem with entrepreneurship, the problem with just starting your own business is that there is no top of the top really. In the sense that nobody's ever going to, in the same way they're never going to give you permission, they're also never going to go, congratulations, you've made it. So it's just this daily, there are no gold stars, there are no A pluses. which I was very used to getting. And so that was a real shock to the system of like, I have to go figure out a way to be the best or the top. And I don't know what that is. And nobody knows what that is. And you spend a lot of years in that when you're building something for yourself and for this like kind of icky reason of, I have to prove to everybody we weren't making the world's biggest mistake, where you're just kind of like getting caught up in the wrong things. Where am I being featured? How many followers do I have? How, like, let me make sure I drop name drop or number drop my figures of how many figures I'm charging for a wedding or how many figures my business made this year. And I just think that you kind of got to go through that life cycle of being an entrepreneur where you move from success to significance and you start to realize one of the best things I ever heard is that the more successful a person is, the quieter they become because they don't have something to prove, right? And I love that. And so I feel like the very short answer to that very long answer is probably, unlike a lot of people, we had this drive, especially me, right from the beginning to go prove something. But I know that there are people who are kind of on the, like you said, the other end of the spectrum where they're like, I can't really relate to that. I just need to know how I even start. Maybe that's something we talk about a little more.
Right. But like, you knew, like, it was supposed to go to a New York law firm and a New York advertising agency, and you wanted to prove yourself. And yet, I mean, now you know that, I mean, you're starting with wedding photography. It's like, there must have been something in your head that like, why are we starting here? Like, why don't we start our own advertising agency or what? You know what I mean? Like something more prestigious. Like what made you just think like, no, this, we can take this and do everything that we want to do with it?
Ooh, that's such a good question. I think that it probably had something to do with this mix of the first time I saw Justin's wedding photos. They were wedding photos in particular. I had never seen anything like that in my life. And I instantly knew we could build something out of it. Like the Michael Gerber in the E-Myth talks about this entrepreneurial seizure where it's like the earth is rotating on its axis. And then suddenly there's like this record scratch, you know, sort of moment, and it restarts. But in that moment, you've seen a flash of like your entire life and what it would look like to work for yourself. And life can never be the same. And once you have that entrepreneurial seizure, you can't ever imagine working for somebody else again. And if there's one thing my dad and I have in common, it's that we both can never imagine working for somebody else again. Now, one thing I'll add to that is one thing that drives me a lot in both our business and then all the coaching and the teaching we do for other people's businesses is I watched my dad do something he loved, do something he had an entrepreneurial seizure for, but struggle his entire life to try to make that business work and be profitable. And so coming full circle to your question, I guess it probably would have been maybe more, potentially more profitable or more prestigious to do the advertising, but that's just, it wasn't what gave us the entrepreneurial seizure in the first place. Like seeing this vision for, I've never seen art like this before. I've never seen storytelling and photojournalism on a wedding day. I'd only ever seen this cheesy version of wedding photography. I knew it was different. I knew that it was special, and I knew that I could come alongside him and help build something really remarkable together. We could build that. So I think it was just this combination of like heart meets entrepreneurism. If that's a word, entrepreneurism, maybe.
It's a word now.
Okay, good.
But having that feeling, wanting to do this, how did you then turn around and sort of, how did you acquire your first customers, your first clients?
Oh, the wrong way. Oh, I love that question. Okay. So we kind of did this thing that I think if anybody is listening to this right now and you're doing this, just stop right now. And that is, we looked around the next morning and we said, awesome, we're wedding photographers in Connecticut. What are we supposed to do? What's everybody else doing? If you are at a place in your life where you're saying, what am I supposed to do? What's everybody else doing? Take some time to take a step back and go, is that actually the right answer? Because in 2006, in Connecticut, the answer was spend about $10,000 on full page print ads and so-called high-end wedding magazines that are no longer in business, FYI, and spend several thousand dollars a pop doing bridal shows, or like maybe a couple thousand dollars to advertise on like a wedding website, for example. And what we sort of came to kind of figure out over the first few years of our business, when we just were not getting the kind of clients that were moving our business forward, they were kind of every business, every client felt like a transaction. Every client sort of felt like they were just looking for the best, you know, most bang, least amount of buck, whatever it might be. This kind of truth that we stumbled across and we now teach in our courses is one of the most important marketing things I can teach any entrepreneur who's listening is this right here, which is the way your clients very first find you, very first stumble upon you, is going to train them. It's going to ping something in their head with this emotion of how to think about you from then on out until you give them something that could undo that. And it's really hard to undo. So when people were finding us as one of 30 photographers lined up side by side at a bridal show, everybody hawking the best bridal show special they could come up with, they were being trained to think, so a photographer is a photographer is a photographer. Line them up side by side and pick the one that's giving the best deal. Got it. Like, we could not be shocked, surprised, or upset when the clients we found that way were coming in and saying, well, can't you do better? Isn't there a better special you can offer? The so-and-so is charging this. Can you match it? Same thing for being lined up in the back of a magazine or a bunch of listings on a website. And so we knew that if we wanted people to want us in particular, they had to hear about us in particular. And they had to hear about us with both word of mouth and word of mouth online marketing in a way that people were not just talking about us. They were talking about us in a way that had exclamation points in it, in a way that actually like felt remarkable and purple cow and stood out in their heads, so that when they came in, they had not just a knowledge of us, but a reason why it was us in particular.
So did that involve like online advertising or content?
So for anybody who's just getting started and you're like, amazing. If you have a bunch of clients, fantastic. You can grow more like them. But if you don't have your first ones yet, what do? For us, our first crop of what we call kind of clients turned friends. So it was this comparison of transactional clients or what we call seedless watermelons, because the booking is ripe and juicy at the time. But if you plant a whole season of seedless watermelons, what do you have next year? No new watermelons because they're seedless. Thank you. Worked hard on that one. Versus relational clients who actually care about you as a person behind your business and want to come alongside and roll up their sleeves and fight to build it with you. We call them clients turned friends. And so the way we got our first crop, we kind of cultivated this first crop of clients turned friends, is really humble beginnings. So it was kind of three main sources. Number one, Justin's dad is a talker and he loves to tell everybody what we're up to. And so he just started saying, my son and my daughter-in-law started a business. They're photographers. And that sounds so small, but to this day, we booked one of our very first big ticket $10,000 wedding packages from his word of mouth. And so they came in, you know, it was kind of qualified word of mouth. We say that's kind of like word of mouth 101 because it's like a parent. Thanks, mom. I'm glad you think I'm good. But the other one that was really huge for us was the advertising photographer Justin had been assisting, who was, he's huge. He's one of the Nikon ambassadors. He's like a legend of light. He's a huge deal, named Jody Dole. He brought Justin to New Haven, Connecticut, which is how we met and fell in love. So we owe him everything. And he also, because he had no desire to do weddings, because weddings were not prestigious, right? He started sending people our way when he would get inquiries. Oh my gosh, your work is amazing, Jody. Will you do my wedding? No, I won't. But this guy who worked for me, who's, let me tell you, and Jody's a New York guy. He is like he can talk the talk. So he's like, he's up and coming. He's going to be the next big thing. And so he was kind of being this, what we're going to call a super referral for us. Because technically, in their eyes, he could be the competition because they were trying to give the job to him. But when you have somebody who's your peer saying, these guys are legit, these guys are the next big thing, you're getting them at the ground floor, they're going to be huge one day, wait and see. They're walking through the door being like, man, because of what they said, with an exclamation point, I have to have you guys in particular. And then the third way was just, honestly, in our community, a couple in our church, for example, they hired us, but then they hired us for about $1,500, but we gave them a $10,000 experience, and they're directly responsible for us getting some $5,000 weddings. And then with the $5,000 weddings, we gave them, you know, a $15,000 experience, whatever it is. And so we just kind of like played to where we wanted to be with each client that was coming in, and they rolled up their sleeves and helped build that business with us. So one crop, one harvest of clients turned into an easier harvest the next year and easier after that.
Nice. And then almost all of those ended up being then referral based. Mm-hmm. No matter where you got the original one, then you pushed for referrals and got those and moved up the chain.
We never had to push for it. That's the genius and the heart behind this relational clients versus transactional. There's a book that changed our lives in the beginning of our business that's called Love Mark, The Future Beyond Brands. Love Marks, plural, The Future Beyond Brands. And it's Kevin Roberts, who's the former CEO of Saatchi & Saatchi. And he talks about, in business, we started off with, you only need a trademark to be a business. And then that kind of evolved to, okay, you got to have like a logo and a color and be known as something. So you'll have a brand. And he said that brands became like big box brands, like a Walmart or Kmart or whatever it might be. And they became what he calls blands. They lost their heart. And in reaction to that, we see the evolution of Love Marks, these smaller companies that people just love to cheer for because they stand for something that the audience stands for. And so a big, huge factor on our site is not just sharing our work or our what, but we talk a ton about our why and leaving a legacy and what we want our work to stand for and why we believe in black and white images to show you how it felt, not just what it looked like. So when we can kind of start to tell these stories and we can start to spin these stories, spin sounds like a negative word. We can start to curate these stories and start to share those on blog posts and Instagram captions and Facebook videos. And we have a promo video that's super powerful and that's 2 minutes or less. It just makes people, like the right people, just connect. And on a heart level, nobody else in the world will ever get us the way these people will level. And so the more that we can do that, the more we move from what we called in the beginning, we had our triangle offensive marketing, which is like you were saying, one-to-one referrals, clients, other photographers, other vendors who could refer us. When you move to these captions and sharing your story on a bigger stage, we go into what we call the secondary circle, which is the friend of a friend of a friend, people you might have never met who are suddenly going out and fighting for your business. And so we have, this is kind of a running joke in our business, pretty much monthly I will get, and for a while there it was like every other day, an inquiry from this girl to be like, oh my gosh, like I have to have you guys. I've heard amazing things about you guys. Erica Johnson said, you are the people I have to hire. And that's fantastic, except we have no idea who Erica Johnson is, right? That's powerful. There's some stranger out there who is just fighting for our business like crazy, because in Love Marks, they talk about how these kinds of companies start to create a following that is loyal beyond reason. It's not rational. It's not logical. It's emotional, and there's something inside them that switches on where they feel like they have to fight for us. And that's when you start seeing that kind of exponential growth.
You've referenced two or three books already throughout this. Mm-hmm. Books are a huge part of your sort of business growth, would you say, and personal growth?
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah. I think, you know, it's so cheesy, but leaders are readers, right? And I think business owners should's a hard word, but I feel okay with this one. I think a book a month, at least. We probably try to do more like two a month. But I think it's got to be the right ones because there's a lot of this one said to do this or this one said to do that. So I would say like top five, if I had to just like rattle them off, would be Purple Cow, Seth Godin. The idea is when you're driving down the road and you see 10,000 brown cows, you're not going to talk about it. But if you see a purple one, you're going to tell people, take a picture, post about it, share it on Facebook. And so being remarkable is being worth remarking on. E-Myth I talked about is like that should be the handbook for starting up a business. I didn't read it for years because I thought the E was like economics and I was going to have to do math. But it's actually the entrepreneurial myth, and it's why most small businesses don't work and what to do about it. Michael Gerber is phenomenal about just kind of breaking down the places where most businesses burn out. And it's not money, really. That's the reason that they fail, is that they are setting themselves up to work around the clock. The thing you love starts to become the thing you hate. So that's E-Myth. Selling the Invisible is a phenomenal book on exactly what we're talking about. This, like, when you're not marketing the specific products, you're marketing a feeling or a service, I guess, to put it in not so fun terms. I like something a little more romantic than that, but a service. I would say Entre Leadership from Dave Ramsey is great for kind of building and expanding your business. And then number five would be Love Marks for sure. Nice. Did I say Love Marks is the first one? I know that was Purple Cow. Okay, good. That's fine. Yeah, nice. That's fine.
The only one I haven't read is Entre Leadership at this point.
Oh, nice. So yeah.
I guess I'll have to do that. And Michael Gerber, definitely, he's probably one of the most referenced on this show.
Oh, I bet.
And he was on this show about a year ago. And
oh my gosh.
It was.
I would die.
It was fun.
That's awesome.
That's how I felt. And it was fun. Let's move, if we can, Mary, though, to projects. So projects is a loose term, but let's say either a new marketing project or a new product that you want to offer. You guys have sort of expanded beyond doing wedding photography at this point. So I would like to know, I know that entrepreneurs come up with a ton of ideas, sometimes too many, and now you have two of them in one company, two entrepreneurs. So I'm sure there's a ton of ideas, but I would like to know, what is your process for sort of sifting through the ideas and deciding that a project is worth your time, energy, and resources?
Oh, man. Ooh, that is a good question. Yeah, two entrepreneurs under the same roof, let me tell you. Oof, we're very lucky in that we have this 1880s fixer upper house. And when I say fixer upper, that sounds cute, but I mean, it was like condemned. We have this house and it's by a seawall. And so we can go and we can walk pound like miles on this pavement, sorting out all the mysteries of life, basically. And so we sort a lot of our ideas and our which way is this going to go? How are we going to build this? How are we going to structure this? Just walking out there on the seawall. And so I am a huge believer in that, just as like a very practical step of there are studies. I actually watched a really good TED talk on this. There's studies that if you will, in those moments of like tension of, is this going to work or is this not? If you will, instead of kind of like retreating to your phone or social media or Facebook, if you will instead go and allow yourself to wander or be bored or take a walk or taking a shower, like why do all of our best ideas come in the shower? It's because you don't take your phone in there. That's a huge part. I hope. I mean, you guys do you, I don't know. But so just kind of getting out there and like accessing that part of your brain that we shut down a lot when we're just filling it with busy or distracting noise, social media, that stuff. But just kind of like, I will say that between the two of us, Justin tends to be the one who comes with these like very big overarching ideas. And I think there's kind of like these two phases. In the beginning, he tends to be like, what if we did this thing that's totally different? For example, like I said, we're big New England people, we're big East Coast people. We go to Nantucket for my birthday every year. So he's like, what if we did like a New England preppy clothing line? That has nothing to do with photography, but we have a skill set of marketing and photography that could translate very easily. At that phase, I tend to be the one who's like putting it through the like filters of, is there actually space in the calendar? Is there actually like, how do we execute this? Like, do I have the mind, the mental space right now to deal with this? And so I would say a lot of those things kind of get put into the like someday folder at that stage of just like, that sounds great, but maybe we'll talk about that next quarter, next year, or when I don't have a to-do list this long. So there's kind of like that level of it. And then there's like, we almost kind of switch gears where I then take on when the things that pass through that first filter, I kind of tend to become more the big picture. What's this going to look like in the end? And he becomes the facilitator of the all the digital back end and building the thing. So we kind of like have this really good give and take. And if it can pass through both of those filters, then it's one of the ones that makes it. So it's kind of got like this great two-part gatekeeping where we both get to be the one who says no at some point or yes at some point. That's the very general version of that. I think on a more specific practical level, it's I've been working with a goals coach for about 3 years where once a month we have a call and we go over the goals for the month and how they move us forward to the goals for the year and the goals for the 5 years. There are a ton of good ideas. There are a ton of things we would love to do, but we've had to identify kind of a big three. And anytime I'm about to kind of have a squirrel moment from the movie Up and go chase a squirrel, where Justin is, we kind of have to say, that's great. There are good yeses, but is it like your best yes? Which is a Lisa Turkhurst book, actually. That's another one I'd recommend. So we've had to say, maybe later, maybe another time, maybe another season of our life, because right now we are laser focused on achieving these big three. It's such a big question and a tough question, but I think it is kind of this combination of we both have to be on board and it has to actually be moving us in the direction we said mattered to us. And if it doesn't, then it's a good yes, but not a best yes.
Right. And I love the idea that you guys get to pass it back and forth a couple times.
Yes.
And the goals. So you have a 5-year goal, and then you have a 1-year goal, and then you have monthly goals. They have to align, otherwise you're never going to get to 1 year in 5 years.
Yeah.
So that does make sense. And I'm assuming those goals, like, do you allow goals at 1 year and 5 year to sort of be fluid and change if you guys wish them to, or is it set and that's what we're sticking to?
I think they have to be fluid. I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe if you're like an Olympic athlete or something like that, and there is just like some singular thing you're working towards. But I think the best part of entrepreneurship is that it is kind of like one big giant game of choose your own adventure. And I feel like most entrepreneurs, at least I would feel very stifled if it was like, nope, we committed to this thing 5 years ago or even a year ago. And I mean, I know for me, my heart gets worked on a lot during that year. My head gets worked on. I learn other things. There's a balance between just chasing a bunch of different things, which I have entrepreneurial friends who are like that, where it's like, you got to rein them in constantly. It's like, whoa, 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 where are you going? But I think there's a difference between moving forward with intention and focus, but not saying, even if I've realized this, maybe you were moving towards this thing that your industry valued as like a vanity metric, but 9 months or 10 months into that goal, you realize this is not what success looks like to me. This is chasing a bunch of stuff other people are chasing. I want to give myself the freedom to go, yeah, that doesn't actually feel like significance to me. That doesn't actually matter. I actually don't care who has the most Instagram followers, because let's be honest, Instagram's going to be something totally different in a year or two. So I feel like you got to give yourself fluidity, but not use it as an excuse to just be all over the place, which is really hard to do. Super hard to do.
It is. It is. It is. Very, very well said. This has been a fascinating conversation, Mary. I do want to sort of segue into the final question, if we could.
Yeah.
It's this idea I've been working with calling the entrepreneurial gap, which seems to be this place, many of us have talked about this, where as entrepreneurs and as dreamers, we always seem to be, with these vanity metrics or whatever it happens to be, always projecting our personal successes into the future, right? So in 3 months when you stand on that stage, or in 6 months when you hit that revenue metric, whatever it is, you and I both know that seconds before you hit that, you're going to set bigger, loftier goals into the future. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So no matter what you accomplish, success is always coming. It's never where we are. So rather than looking forward for this, for the next couple of minutes, Mary, I would love it if you could stop and turn around and look behind you. Since that big decision 12 years ago and this journey that you've been on, I'm sure we haven't got to talk about all the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses, but tell me how you feel about all of it up until today.
Oh man, you're going to make me cry in the living room. Holy moly. Gosh. Whew. Yeah, I mean, that is such a powerful question, because you're 1,000% right. The sentence that's like, oof, like, not nailed to the heart, that's not it. Whatever that saying is seconds before you walk on stage for whatever it is, that thing will already feel like not a big deal because you're the one doing it, right? There's like that old joke. It's like, I would never want to be part of a club, any club that would have me as a member or whatever. And so the second you achieve it, it's no big deal. But the second you're watching somebody else achieve it, it's like life and death that it hasn't happened for you. Justin and I actually just had kind of a moment like that where we were flown out to Alaska last week with 45 other photographers from all over the country by this lighting company we have looked up to and adored for years, that like 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, when we were starting our 6 years ago, I would say, when we were starting our business, it would have been this like lifelong, like untouchable, unreachable dream for them to even like know our name, for example. And since then, we've done a couple projects with them. They named us one of their Legends of Light, and they just flew us across the country to the last frontier, I guess is what they call Alaska. And we got to be the first to try out their brand new light. And we were one of the ones that they chose. And so we were sitting out there walking with like a glacier behind us or whatever. And I had to keep saying to Justin, we have to find a way to be more present in this exact moment, to soak this in a little bit more, because this cannot be blasé. This cannot be just, oh yeah, this is normal. Because if we were sitting at home watching anybody else be here right now, our hearts would be breaking that we weren't there yet. And yet the second you're there, it's so easy to feel like, okay, this is normal. We're just going to wake up and there's a moose outside or whatever. So I feel like, to answer your question, in both directions, right? It's before I take that kind of look back to where we've come, this constant need to look forward and say the next thing, I think that only ever starts to get reined in when we start to look at our hearts and the reason why we feel like we always need the next thing, because we're trying to fill a hole in our hearts with something that's always just beyond our grasp. And we can't find our true like identity and our true worth in these check marks, because you get to the bottom and it multiplies. So looking back, I would say that I'm just super proud of these two kids. Like, we had just gotten engaged. We had the whole world kind of being dangled in front of us. I'll try not to make too many unflattering references, but you know, there's like all the law firm like movies, like The Devil's Advocate or whatever. So, you know, it's kind of like the fruit is being dangled. Come here, where we will put you in the penthouse or whatever. Our parents were very relieved that my dad in particular, that there were good jobs lining up. They were talking about the, like I said, the mortgages and the private schools and the whole thing, right? The whole upper west side, east side, whatever it is, dream. And I'm super proud of these two kids who said, we think we can do better. Like, we don't know how. We don't really know anything about running a business. We certainly don't have the budget that you're offering us. We're going to have to go figure it out on our own and fall on our faces a bunch and like see if we really do have that grit inside to get up over and over again. And dang it, have we ever done that for 12 years? And you're right, it changes you when you go through that. And so we're both on the like pivotal point of another pivot. I'm actually in the process of writing my first book that has nothing to do with photography. I'm stepping into the author world. I'm a newbie all over again. Justin's getting much more into editorial photography. We just got a studio. And I know without a doubt that the last 12 years have not been wasted because we have kind of built the grit muscle in the trenches running this business. So I would say I'm proud of us is where I kind of land.
Very, very, very well said. And you should be. And you should be. So, Mary, we've got to talk about the business throughout the conversation, but I believe you have two websites to direct people to. Could you now just tell people about those websites and then where they can find you online?
Yeah, tell me which two you're thinking of, because we actually have several.
Oh, do you? I have the justinandmaryweddings.com and justinandmaryblog.com.
Perfect. And you just see that. Here's a hint. Outsource. Yeah, that's right. justinandmaryweddings.com, justinandmaryblog.com are kind of the two main wedding ones. We have one that's a shop for our education. That's jmtheguide.com. And then we have just a bunch of other ones that are kind of individual sites for the individual courses, but they don't need to know this.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
And
excellent.
And on Instagram, it's at Mary Marantz. And on Facebook, it's /Justin and Mary.
Yeah. Justin and Mary. Nice. Yeah. And at Mary Marantz on Instagram, all one word. I'll link to the sites. I'll link to these five books we talked about, as well as Facebook and Instagram all throughout this. Oh, and I guess I'll link to the Michael Gerber episode. Why not?
Yeah.
So you can check it out.
Heck yeah. You want to.
So once again, Mary, thank you so much for stopping by. Thank you so much for sharing so openly and honestly. I truly, truly appreciate it. And I just keep doing what you're doing because it is really awesome to watch.
Thank you so much. And again, thank you for having me. And thank you to everybody who's listening. And I just hope that for every person who is sitting in that place that, you know, make sure, like I said, you're doing it well. But if you're feeling called to something, this life is way too short not to listen.
All right. Well, we made it through the interview. And I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. For those of you who've never been here before, this is the part of the show where we go back and we pull out one of the hacks that Mary said. One of the things that really, really stood out. I'm ready. Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
The way your clients very first find you, very first stumble upon you, is going to train them. It's going to ping something in their head with this emotion of how to think about you from then on out until you give them something that could undo that. And it's really hard to undo.
And that's the hack. Mary, Mary, Mary. I absolutely love this. The way your clients very first find you is how they're going to remember you, is how they're going to picture you or the pedestal that you put you on. We don't talk about this enough on this show. This would be what we would call positioning in marketing. In the marketing space, it's positioning yourself within your market. So there's a lot of times where I will tell you, I will implore you, if you will, to look at the market and maybe like copy or take ideas from other people, if you will, because I don't think that we should be reinventing the wheel. But once you find your market, once you find your product, the product doesn't necessarily have to change or the service, but the way you position yourself within that market absolutely does. Because as Mary goes on to say, when they started, they didn't position. They positioned themselves, and so they blended in with the other 30 photographers in their space. And they were all the same, lined up, and it was all about price. But then they realized to position themselves differently. So when potential clients found them, they immediately stood apart from the market, and it was very hard for them to, in their head, make that move to put Mary and her husband back into this group and just go off of numbers. When you can position yourself separately from the rest of the market, this is where you can begin to take your business to the levels that you want to take it. Mary, thank you so very, very much. All right. And if you are still thinking about starting your first side hustle or business, or you're a longtime business veteran, if at any point during your journey you decide that you want more, that you want to get serious and take the next step, not just as a dreamer, but as an entrepreneur, I'm ready for you. Go to roadmaptofreedom.co and grab your 21 steps to starting a profitable online business. It's a report, and I made it just for you. All right, this is fun.
Thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it very much. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the main website. You can head over there and see Mary's show notes if you wish. And check out the blog. Check out more podcast episodes if you would like. It's all there and it's all for you. All right, until next time, thank you so very much. And please keep hacking the entrepreneur.